The Blast from Our Past Network.
Lock your doors, close your windows, turn out your lights, for chills and thrills await you. It's time for Podcasting After Dark with your hosts, Corey Stevenson and Zach Schaefer. Stay with a friend, say your prayers as grisly ghouls close in to seal your doom, and enjoy this bonus episode of Podcasting After Dark.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Podcasting After Dark mini review. I am co-host Corey, and usually I fly solo on these, but I'm bringing Luna back for us to discuss Mallrats. And you all should go listen to our discussion of Clerks previously, and this is Luna's your foray into Kevin Smith films. And I'm happy to be your guide, but Luna, how's it going?
It's going good. I'm glad to be back for another episode. Thanks for inviting me.
Of course. And we had a lot of fun on Clerks. And now we are going to be talking about Mallrats from 1995. And everybody listening out there, if this is your first time listening to Podcasting After Dark, Zach and I, my proper co-host for the show, we actually reviewed Mallrats, I think like in season two or three, about 4 years ago. So you can go back, you can listen to that full, you know, review and breakdown and get all my thoughts on it. So this is mostly going to be what Luna's thoughts are on Mallrats. And as a first time watch, and then as we discussed in the Clerks episode, you were born in 92. So you were still a wee little lass back then. And I can understand that, you know, these didn't really cross your path back then, but now we're getting into them. So Luna, what'd you think of Mallrats, just right off the top?
Well, I know that this was your favorite compared to Clerks, but I'm going to be honest, I like Clerks a little bit better, but I say that also recognizing that I was laughing the whole time through Mallrats. It was really funny. It was a little cringe. There was parts where I was literally covering my face with my fingers kind of a slit so I could kind of poke through. But it was a funny watch. It's got a lot going on. It is, I think, a little bit different than Clerks. It's a different film style, I found. But you're bringing back some of your favorite characters like Silent Bob and Jay. So it definitely has that connection. But yeah, overall, I enjoyed it. It was just a little different. It wasn't what I was expecting.
Oh, okay. What do you have any idea what you were expecting? Like, was there another type of movie you were thinking this was going to go for?
No, I think I went into it with just like not a different mindset. But when I heard Mallrats, I'm thinking Clerks. So I'm thinking it's going to be focused on the people who work at the mall. But really, right, we're talking about the kids who are making a menace at the mall.
Yes.
Which, and I've been there myself. You know, I think maybe these days being a young person at the mall, I don't know if it has the same kind of pull, but when I was, you know, in my early teens, like being at the mall was the place to be. Yeah. You know, you go hang out with all of your friends and run out the mall and maybe not even buying anything, but you're just kind of spending your day there. So that's kind of what this film was. And I had a different perspective. I thought it'd be more focused on the mall workers, like Clerks was focused on the actual clerks. But that didn't take away from it. I started watching it. Oh, this is different than I thought it would be.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm like you, you know, 95, I was a bit older in 95, but like you, I went to the mall a lot as a kid, and, you know, it's just someplace you'd go and hang out. And where I grew up, there were like three pretty big malls all within sort of equal distance, you know, from one another. And, you know, we even had like a dirt mall nearby and everything. And I think one of the reasons this clicked with me so much harder than Clerks did is, I mean, I watched Clerks when it came out. I was still in high school. I wasn't even like working at the video store and stuff like that. So like my love for Clerks kind of came later. Whereas Mallrats, I think I was pretty much the exact age as they were supposed to be portraying, like Brody and TS and everything like that. Like they were sort of like seniors in high school, whereas I was probably a junior, but close enough.
Not too far off.
Yeah, not too far off. So I think that also helped to, you know, why it really clicked with me. But then I really got into Clerks when I started working at the video store, and I was like, yeah. And even in Clerks, you know, Dante and Randall, I think they're supposed to be like in their very late teens or 21, like they can drink or something. So I think even they were supposed to be older. Whereas in Mallrats, I think Brody and Quint are supposed to be like around 17, 18, 19, something like that. What'd you think of the cast? I mean, you do have some big names like Shannon Doherty in this, who,
and Stanley.
And then you got Stan Lee and everything. So, like, yeah, what did you think of the cast as – and Ben Affleck, for crying out loud.
Ben Affleck, that's right. You know, there's another character, Brody, Jason Lee, is actually in a newer show that I started watching called The Residents, which is on Netflix. So I watched actually Mallrats first, and then I started watching The Residents, and I'm like, oh, there he is. And, you know, funny enough, he plays a similar character in both that TV series and Mallrats.
He always sort of plays that character.
Sometimes you get really good at doing one thing, and it, you know, it stick with it because it works. I think they had a really great cast. It was a great lineup. I think they all played together really well. You know, obviously the story kind of follows Jason Lee and Jeremy London as T.S. Quint. Their kind of friendship getting broken up with at the beginning of the film. But I enjoyed it. I thought they all worked together really well. And of course, with Jay and Silent Bob coming back.
Yes, I know. And that's, of course, they're going to be obviously a mainstay. You know, after this comes Chasing Amy, which is an enjoyable movie. And then after that comes Dogma, which I actually really, really like. Both of those have Jay and Silent Bob in them. So, it's a running thing that kind of goes through earlier Kevin Smith movies. But like Clerks, this one is also sort of like it's a day in the life of, you know,
yes.
It's like it starts with the beginning of their day and both of our main, you know, protagonists getting dumped. And then by the end of the day, they're both getting back with their girlfriends in grand fashion. And it's sort of like everything in between. But, you know, so you're obviously watching Kevin Smith get a bigger budget. You know, he's filming in color now because, you know, Clerks was in black and white because it's infinitely cheaper to get black and white film back then than it was to get color. So he's got a bigger budget. You know, they're filming in a mall. They're filming at night, pretty much is what they're kind of doing in there. But how do you feel Kevin Smith graduated budget-wise? How do you think it felt going from Clerks? Or like for you, how does it feel going from Clerks to Mallrats? Is he still maintaining his Kevin Smithiness?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it evolved appropriately. Like they had some really great skits with Silent Bob kind of flying through the air, crashing through walls. So you can tell, like, you know, they're able to do a little bit more. Clerks, I mean, they almost don't even change the frame too often. It's kind of like focused in the register, focused in the store. So there's not even a whole lot of movement with the camera, where this is much more diversified. You've got a lot more going on. You've got more cast members, I feel. So there's a few different storylines going on at the same time. And none of it felt fake, you know, like it was believable. It didn't feel overly cheesy or like you could see sort of like, oh, this looks like a set. Like it really felt like it was was it a real mall? Like you mentioned, like actually filming inside of, yeah.
So they filmed inside of a mall, but I think they filmed at nighttime, you know, probably like from like 9 o'clock to like 4 a.m. or something, you know?
Yeah, I think it worked really well. I mean, all the pieces fit. Nothing felt out of place. And you can definitely see they've graduated with some of their stunts and their set. It worked really well.
And like in Clerks, you have like this oddball collection of characters, like Ethan Suplee's character, who's trying to look at the magic.
The sailboat?
Yeah, the sail. I love it when the little kid's like, it's a schooner. And he just looks at it. He's like, you dumb bastard. It's a sailboat. She's like, a schooner is a sailboat. You know, for me, what I love about Kevin Smith movies is the collection of side characters. Like for me in this movie, I love LaFours. I thought he was great, you know, even has 2 kills, you know, and everything. And I thought he was funny. Obviously, I like, you know, Ethan Suplee's character in it. And just all these like side characters. I think Kevin Smith kind of gets known for this like oddball collection of characters that he sort of puts in his film.
There definitely are a few oddballs. You know, one of my favorites, and I think I like this because I'm going to be honest with you, I hate escalators. I've seen way too many escalator, like, stories in the news and on YouTube. And then you have Brody, like, yelling at the kid, he's on the escalator again, he's on the escalator again. And then, like, 5 minutes go by, and the security's getting a call, like, some kid's fallen into the escalator. You only see the kid for a second, but he does kind of come back for a few scenes, like in speech only. And I love that kind of continuation of that piece, because the escalator is like one of those things that I always keep in my mind and have it in the movie from the 90s. I'm like, see, because I actually watched the movie with my friend Alea, so we got to kind of experience it together, and we were cracking up the whole time.
That's I love hearing that. And I'm glad you bring up that, like, the escalator bit, because, like, watching it the other night, just kind of refamiliarizing myself with I don't need an excuse to watch Mallrats. But I, you know, I got super baked and I just watched it and I was loving life. I was having so much fun. You and I were texting each other and everything. And but one thing I did realize is that, you know, some of Kevin Smith's jokes are obviously kind of childish, and he's going for kind of a specific style and everything. And whether you argue that some of the jokes are funny or not, you have to admit he pays off every joke that he sets up. Like, he doesn't ever forget, like, a setup. He'll pay it off and pretty, like, fast, like the escalator, you know. And you know, it's you lay the groundwork for that joke in when Brody and TS are going down the escalator.
Mm-hmm.
Then they go to have that confrontation at the comic book store. But the reason that they can get past the security guards is because of the incident with the kid
exactly.
on the escalator. So it's everything. He does a masterful job of setting things up and then paying them off. And sometimes the joke's not that funny, but sometimes it is.
Well, even with Brody's ex-girlfriend, not the first ex-girlfriend, but the previous, I think it was Gwen.
Yeah.
You have Silent Bob like crashing into the dressing room with her multiple times before they even introduce her as an ex of Brody. So I thought that tied together really well, because you think she's just some poor woman who's being, you know, in a wrong place, wrong time, with Silent Bob crashing into the dressing room. And then it turns out she's like, oh, some creep's been trying to get a peek at me, so I'm just going to change right here in the middle of the store when she's trying on lingerie. And you have no idea that she's Brody's ex-girlfriend until you kind of get a little bit further on into the movie. So I thought they did a great job, like you said, tying these jokes or these side characters into the broader narrative of the movie. And they always come back and it always ties up really neatly.
Now, what about Mr. Svenning, the main villain of the entire film? Obviously, you know, we saw him in as Yondo in Guardians of the Galaxy. Oh my God, why am I blanking on his name? Good Lord, everyone! Someone's driving off the road right now. But of course, I am talking about Michael Rooker. What'd you think of him as the villain of the film, and what his comeuppance was?
I mean, he was a really, because he started off as, what's the girl's name? The dad, not Gwen's
dad.
Yeah,
Brandy's dad.
And from the get-go, he kind of has this machismo aura about him. I mean, they kind of like his karate kicks in the towel. And then the film crew was like picking up on outside of his house, and he's running outside screaming in his towel. So he plays a really good machismo character, kind of that overly protective father. I mean, he absolutely hates TS, right? Like, he's just like mortal enemy. Like, there's no way that you're going to be involved with my daughter. And then when TS mentions that he was going to propose, I think in Florida, they were going to take like a trip to Florida, and he almost like just loses his shit. Like, his face is getting red, the veins are bulging out of his face.
Like when he's like, I accept the fact that you've weaseled your way like into her panties at least twice. And TS is like, oh, my God, it's a whole lot more than that.
So he played a great villain. And then, you know, he does get some poetic justice. It was so gross when he's eating those chocolate pretzels. And, you know, I mean, you know what's happening. And it's just like you're sitting there with your hand on your face. And you're like, oh, my God, I cannot believe he's licking his fingers. He's getting all up in those contaminated pretzels, and it is so nasty. And then, you know, a couple of scenes later, he's got food poisoning or some sort of stomach trouble from eating you know, his shit hand, basically.
The old stink palm.
But, you know, they do at the end, he does get the job he wanted, which was to be, I think, like in a film studio. He's just what, a janitor or something like that. So he kind of gets what he's asking for a little bit.
And I do love how you kind of see what everyone's, you know, at the end. I love when movies do that. They show you where they're going to be. And like Animal House kind of did that. And I think, you know, this was Kevin Smith trying to make his sort of zany comedy from the 80s, like an Animal House, like a Caddyshack. You know, I think this was him trying to do that with sort of the wackiness of it. You know, like, obviously there's things that are just, this is not in a world that is our reality. It's in some kind of cartoon world, which ultimately, you know, like, there are multiple other Clerks movies. There's a Clerks 2 and a Clerks 3. But I like the Clerks cartoon because I think Kevin Smith does a better job creating a cartoon reality than he does trying to create a realistic reality.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I mean, especially with Gwen. I keep forgetting the other girl's name. Brandy. Brandy, yeah. The fact that they even play with the idea of getting back with Brody and TS. Because, I mean, the guys have nothing going for them. They don't even really treat their girlfriends that well. So this is definitely in some alternative reality. Otherwise, women just have really low standards because these guys, I mean, like it says, they're mall rats, right? They're not judging anybody for being in the comic books because I'm into all sorts of naughty stuff, but they're just not taking their lives or their relationships too seriously. And the fact the girls still hold out kind of like this piece of their heart for them, even though they could very well move on and find maybe better suitors. It's definitely a cartoon world, which makes it all the more funny because you're sitting there like, no, like, don't get back with him. Like,
yeah. And it's like, what did Brody like even do to win back Shannon Doherty? Like nothing. It was more of the fact that who she was going to date, Ben Affleck's character, yep, for the audience was clearly like the worst choice. Like they set it up like that, but they don't really set up like that Brody even like learned anything or even sort of grew as a character. He sort of got the job as the Tonight Show host just by being himself, which is, yep, the movie's almost sort of rewarding Brody for just being himself.
Well, I mean, and even when he gets back with Brandy, it's really because they're on the game show, right? And he's like weaseled his way into the game show. And at first she has no idea it's him, which is like, how did she recognize his voice right out of the gate? But they're kind of going back and forth. And finally, like, you know, doesn't he pop the question in front of the audience and everyone's cheering and she has no choice, right? She's going to look like the total asshole if she says no to him in front of all these people who are cheering them on.
That's what's funny, because when I watch this and I'm like 17 or 18 when this comes out, I'm like, oh yeah, like, yeah, he proposes right there. It's great. I'm watching it now when I'm 47 and I'm like, oh, that's kind of a dick move, because you're kind of just forcing her on the spot to do that. And, you know, I did understand even then her point of view, where she's like, so wait, you're coming on my dad's show and ruining it to kind of, to do this? But then, of course, when he proposes, she's like, oh, yes, you know? And I do get the feeling, or, I mean, it's obvious, but I think it comes through more so now that the movie's written by a 22-year-old male, you know?
Yep, absolutely. It definitely shows through. I mean, there's so many instances of comedy that's a little cringe that maybe hasn't aged too well over the past 30 years, but it's still hilarious. I mean, even like when they go to like the fortune teller and, you know, the only way that she can tell the future is by kind of like playing with her breasts, and she has this third nipple that's secretly like a gummy candy that tastes like cherry.
You mean one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie?
One of your favorite scenes? Was it Brody or TS who was closing their eyes?
Brody, because he just couldn't look at it.
Yeah, and like that's exactly what I was doing. I was like kind of like peeking through my eyes, like, or through my hands, like watching her. Because it's hilarious, but you're like, what is this?
Obviously, Jay and Silent Bob get more to do in this movie. Were you enjoying it, or was it cringy, or did you like him? Did you like them becoming bigger characters in this version?
I love them becoming bigger characters. Absolutely.
Okay, so are you a Jay and Silent Bob fan at this point?
Absolutely. I think they were funnier characters than Brody and TS were, because Brody and TS had me cringing, but Jay and Silent Bob, I think, play the comic relief really well. I mean, you've got them getting the other show contestants high with Snoochie Boochie. You've got Silent Bob performing these like great acrobatics with Sven Thorsen's character, LaForge, like trying to like knock his hat off, flying through the air. I think it was in a Batman costume at one time.
Batman references, like where he picks up Jay and they go up in the sky and Jay's like, where do you get your wonderful toys? And then kisses him. It's all,
he has a little gun that he shoots.
It's all from Batman, you know, Tim Burton's Batman. And what, it's great. I mean, there's a lot like Quentin Tarantino, Kevin Smith's very similar. There's a lot of movie references and movie discussions in these movies. But yeah. So back to Jay and Silent Bob, though.
Oh, yeah, it was great. And I think there's even a Jay and Silent Bob show. Is that they?
Well, there's going to be a movie called Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. I believe that'll be after Dogma.
Okay.
So if you want to watch them in order, you would watch.
Dogma.
They're
which
in Dogma.
You've recommended a few times to me. Okay.
Yeah, they're in Dogma. I think you might enjoy Dogma. They are in that. They're in Chasing Amy, but they're not in it a lot, and they're toned down because then the next movie is Kevin Smith trying to make it more of a serious comedy and less of a slapstick comedy. And then back to Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back is complete over the top zaniness like Mallrats and Clerks.
I'll have to watch it.
Yeah.
But I even love when they're working with Brody and TS on, like, you know, how are we going to take down this game show before they end up being on the game show. And they have these blueprints with schematics drawn out. And I think Jay even calls himself Victorious Jay on the blueprints if you pay attention enough. So they were great. I think they played really good side characters. They were they're really big side characters too, you know, because one, they obviously keep coming back throughout the whole film, but the role that they play in kind of helping our protagonists you know, if you want to call them protagonists, is really thoughtfully done.
Yeah. Did you like his Wolverine blades and everything? And there's all so many comic book references in this movie. And again,
which is perfect for you because, I mean, you were all things pop culture.
especially back then, like, it was me and my buddies, like, oh, my God, nudging each other, like, at the references and, you know, the movie posters and the comic book posters on the back of, you know, Brody's wall and everything in his basement room and whatnot. I mean, like, before Clerks and Mallrats, there were not really, like, any movies out there that were, like, this much, like really elevating, like, the nerd culture type of thing. And, you know, later on, moving forward, you'll get a lot of stuff, like, you know, the movie Fanboys, and even, like, Robot Chicken. Like, none of that stuff would exist without Mallrats and Clerks, and Kevin Smith sort of, like, laying this groundwork for nerd culture.
Well, I mean, it's a huge part of pop culture, so I think just ignoring it and you have all these fan bases who are gonna shout when they see it show up in the movie is just perfect. And I think Brody's even into some like I don't want to call them a third party comics, but kind of like not the official comic book comics. Even in the intro, I think it's the intro to the movie, or maybe it was at the end, where they're kind of showing these like comic books that are like not quite the actual Hulk, but kind of a Hulk.
Well,
not quite
so
Superman.
Those were all homages to different Image comic covers, and he had the actual artist like draw them and everything. So were all sort of characters, and you know, and that was like for me peak heyday of collecting comics. So even now when I'm watching, I'm like, yep, I know that artist, I know that artist, I know that artist, I know that artist. And basically what they did was they made a recreation of one of their covers. But like, so the one with like Gwen was a recreation of Gen 13. They even make like her name Gwen in the same font as the Gen 13 and everything. And the pose was the same and everything as this one, you know, cover. But I mean, yeah, right out of the gate, you see that at the beginning and you sort of know what kind of movie you're in for here with the pop culture references and or who it's sort of aimed at.
Yes. Well, even in Clerks, I mean, they were going back and forth with each other, debating like the Death Star. So this stuff keeps getting brought up in these movies. And I think it adds to the character development because it really highlights, you know, what is the personality like for our protagonists? Who are they? What are they into? What are their lives are like? And then how does that even relate to their relationships? Because with Brody, I mean, all he does is he wants to play, I think he plays Sega. He reads his comic books and he's not paying attention to his girlfriend. And she's like, hey, like, hello, I'm here.
He's a terrible fucking boyfriend.
Yes, he's a terrible boyfriend. He won't even introduce her to his mom. So it kind of plays into that, like, you know, like son living in their mom's basement until they're 35. Even though he's not quite that old yet, like it kind of like things could go in that trajectory for him if he's not careful. So
Yeah. Now, of course, like the great thing to pick your brain about, Luna, is, you know, how well does this movie hold up today? And like, as far as like work goes, you know, we establish you work in retail. Are you working in a mall right now or have you worked in a mall?
It's an outdoor mall.
Okay. Which so, that has a very different vibe than an actual mall proper.
It does. And you know, most of the mall that I am in is like services. It's not a whole lot of like retail. So there's a lot of restaurants, there's like spas and hair salons and nail salons and medical offices. So it does attract a little bit of a different, group of people than if you're going to like a huge mall with a lot of retail stores that you're getting a lot of kids hanging out at. So it is a different, environment. But even like working in the past, I think especially like working in like cannabis dispensaries and like glass shops, the type of characters that you get coming in and out of your business is it's you can relate to the characters in the show if you've ever worked in retail, even if you haven't worked in a mall. I do think that Clerks, as someone who works in retail, was more relatable because it's focused on the actual clerks in the movie. Whereas like I think if you're like a 20-something-year-old, maybe you don't have that same relationship with like going to the mall with your friends. Maybe you do, but I feel like a lot of times like you go to the mall these days and it's kind of like a dead zone. Like they unless it's like a really upscale mall that's managed to like hold on to their tenants, you don't have that same like community feel where you're going into a mall full of a bunch of, relatively affordable shops that are kind of like geared towards like the average American family and teenagers. It doesn't feel that way anymore. So I don't think that if you had someone who's 18, 19, 20 watching this, if they would get some of the references. So I felt like Clerks for me was more relatable, but I could still relate to Mallrats because I've been a little bit of a menace at the mall. I mean, when I was growing up, we had the Sony store and the Apple store, and I remember going into those places with my best friend Ted and like changing all the wallpapers on the MacBooks. You can't do that anymore because they've got all these, software locks in there, so it just kind of displays the features of the MacBook. But back in the day, you could pretty much they were just fully functional computers. So we would, change the backgrounds, like wonky things or to their competitors' websites. And I think, any teenager in their 30s, a teenager in their 30s, a 30 person who's experienced their teens in the United States can kind of relate to like being kind of a little menace at the mall, being a little mall rat. I mean, we've all been there. It's definitely, I think, as Americana goes, it's an important part of like coming of age, right? You're finally old enough to be let out alone, going to the mall with your friends and not having any parental supervision and seeing what kind of trouble you can get into.
And it's also like a coming of age thing where like you spend your whole entire day with your friend who got dumped, and you guys are spending like so much energy trying to figure out like how to get the person back or what do whatever. So much energy that when the solution is just go talk to them like a normal person. And as a 47-year-old now, I look at a movie like this and I'm like, it just seems so exhausting. You know what I mean? But as a kid, but it's a perfect representation of that time frame, I think, for everybody of that age. It doesn't matter if you're like 18 now, if you're 18 back in 1995, or if you're 18 back, it doesn't matter. Everyone did this. You know, you had time on your hands. You didn't have a job. It didn't matter. And you would spend the whole day with your friend trying to figure out ways to get your girlfriend or your boyfriend back or whatever. And I think that's kind of timeless, you know, even if some of the references are not.
It is timeless because we all go through, the troubles of a relationship in your teenagers because emotions are so high, right? I mean, the hormones are flowing and I mean, as a teenager, you could very much break up in the morning and get back together, by midnight. Like it's not outside of the realm of the possibilities because everything is just so intense, I would say, when you're, 18, 19. I mean, I can remember how intense my emotions were at that age. I mean, it's,
Yeah, well, I mean, even at the beginning of the movie, TS is like, I thought we were over this makeup breakup shit. So you can just, you know that this is kind of like the norm, or maybe they've had a good solid like 6 months of things being pretty stable or whatever. But yeah, I don't, you know what? I don't want to be 17 or
No,
18 ever again.
absolutely not.
What didn't work for you in this movie? Any characters that didn't work for you? Anything stand out for you where like, you know what, that was really dated right there?
I think the only thing that was maybe a little bit too far for me was the teenager who was like sleeping with older men as research. Like
Trish the dish.
Trish. I mean, it's funny, but I'm like, holy shit, man. Like, that's pretty fucked.
Yeah, because she's supposed to be 15. Now, of course, he uses it at the end. And by he, I mean Kevin Smith uses it at the end to get, Ben Affleck's character sort of out of the way for Brody and Shannon and Doherty to sort of get back together. But yeah, at the same time, like, man, you couldn't have made her like if you had to go, if you needed her to be underage, make her like 17. I mean, not that that's any better. Just don't isolate that and quote me on it. Not that it's any better, but it's better than 15.
Yeah, 15 is, and the fact that her parents were in on it and supportive and like, oh yeah, you know, do this research, quote unquote research. And then she ends up, you know, hooking up with LaFours at the end, I think, like in some like display. It's just like, holy shit. And like, yeah, like, you know, it gets Ben Affleck's character out of the way. He gets like, I think, arrested because they're like filming the deed, like in front of a televised audience. But
who's
like,
your favorite new kid? Call me Donnie. Oh yeah.
So that was just like, for me, I don't think someone could put that in a movie in 2025.
Yeah. And it was a little wonky in 1995 as well. I'm not gonna lie. It was a little cringe, as the kids would say. Did you, real quick, in the so at the end of the game show, when TS and Brody have to replace the two people, I do love when Jay goes, "Do it, Doug," because that's his fake name, but he knows what Brody's real name is. But I love he says, "Do it, Doug." Gil Hicks, did you reckon it's the same actor as Dante in Clerks?
I didn't pick up on that. I have the cast list actually pulled up right now, and I'm looking at him, but I did not connect that. So that's Dante.
Well, it's technically his brother, because okay, it's Gil Hicks. In Clerks, it's Dante Hicks. So Kevin Smith is already making a shared universe. So you know, that's one of the things I do love about, like, before the MCU, all of Kevin Smith's movies take place in the same universe. So here it's the same actor, but he's playing Gil Hicks and not Dante Hicks. And he doesn't come out and specifically say, but, you know, Kevin Smith has said in interviews that, you know, oh, it's his brother, you know?
Well, there's even like a quick scene in Mallrats where they like kind of pan in on like a grocery, like quick stop corner store, which, I don't, was it the same one as Clerks, or are they just referencing, like, it's when they're on their way from, I think,
to the dirt mall or whatever,
to the dirt mall, and it just kind of flashes really quick. There's like a little corner store grocery.
Yeah. So yeah, I was like, probably like an homage, you know,
to Clerks. So I can see that it's all kind of tied in together.
Well, in the next movie, Chasing Amy, so, Ben Affleck is going to be the main character in it, but he's not playing the guy in Mallrats, and then Jason Lee is going to be his friend in it as well. But Jason Lee's not playing Brody. He's playing a different character. So Kevin Smith will do that, you know, and you know, still be in the same universe. But were you expecting Ben Affleck to be a part of the Kevin Smith universe?
No, I mean, when I saw me and my friend, I was like, oh, it's Ben Affleck. Look. So like, it was kind of, because I mean, this has been a while, so it's kind of fun to see him as like a younger person playing the manager of like the basically like a men's warehouse kind of shop.
Fashionable male. Yeah.
Fashionable male. Yes. And he's kind of a total dick.
He's a piece of shit. That's great. One of my favorite lines from the entire movie is when he leans in real close to TTS and he says, "Let me tell you something. The customer's always an asshole." I love it. I love it. I'm very happy that you all enjoyed it. So your friend liked it as well.
Yes, like I said, like there were moments where we were literally covering our faces, but we were both, I mean, we're both adults and we were both laughing through the whole movie. So awesome. I can't take that away from it. I really enjoyed it. It was funny. It was cringe. It was relevant and dated at the same time.
Some things are timeless, some things are painfully 1995, like the wardrobes, like those, you know, Brody wearing a t-shirt over top of another t-shirt and everything. I'm like, oh my god, and everything is so baggy. I'm like, this is so 1995.
Yeah, so 1995. I mean, even I remember as a kid, like my like 90s wardrobe was, I had these like bright prison orange like jumpsuit pants. I hated jeans as a little kid. So I would always wear, and it was like, looking back, I'm like, oh, I can't believe my parents like ever let me wear that. But like, it was very out of the 90s. And you know, I see kind of that style. I think we talked about this a little bit in Clerks, some of that style coming back, a little bit of like the oversized, almost like a zoot suit kind of, kind of aesthetic. People really get into the baggy stuff again with the kind of the underwear, the boxers pulled up. So you can see the brand label on the side. So some of that's kind of making its ways again.
Yeah, everything fashion always comes in cycles.
In a cycle, yes.
Now, last episode on Clerks, I asked you who was your favorite character of the two protagonists, and same question again. Who did you like better, Brody or T.S.? Or who did you relate to, I guess I should say?
Neither. I think in Clerks, Dante, because he had the manager thing going on, and even though he didn't want to be at work, he's still, you know, responsible for opening the store and keeping the customer served. So I didn't really relate to Brody or T.S. so much, but I really enjoyed Silent Bob's character in Mallrats. I think he really came through. And at the end, after he used his Jedi powers to like pull the tape out from like that little nook when he was hanging upside down, he finally breaks his silence. And he's like, there was never anything that was like important enough to say before. So I thought he was one of my favorite characters. He just kept coming up doing these zany stunts. And the fact that you can even like when he's able to get the videotape up, because I think which character is he was like flipped a switch and like it moved something and then he was able to grab onto the tape. You can kind of see his facial expressions like, I think I really just made that work. Like it really
he's almost surprised at himself. Ethan Suplee's character when he's like, why, Lord? When will I see the sailboat? Yeah. And he hits his head or something again. That's a great scene. So you'd say Silent Bob is your favorite character in the movie?
I would say Silent Bob is my favorite character. In this one, yeah. Because he wasn't so much in Clerks. He just some very brief, you know, moments where he's with Jay hanging outside the corner store. But in this one, I felt like his role really shone through. So I'm looking forward to seeing him in some of the future films that you'd recommend for me to watch.
Okay. Well, I mean, the next one up is Chasing Amy, if you want to watch that one. We can do a mini review on that one as well.
I'll put it on the list.
Well, I mean, this is fun. We can go through the... I mean, at some point, we're going to get to a point where I'm not into Kevin Smith movies anymore, and maybe we'll keep going. But for now, it's kind of fun getting your perspective on things because these movies were so big for me back in the day. They held a period of time for me that was very specific, you know, and I kind of don't watch them as much anymore, but I watched these movies a ton during the time frame that I was in love with them. So it's nice getting a perspective, a fresh perspective on these movies. And especially since, you know, at this point, they're 30 years old. No.
Yeah, 30
years old. Yeah. So this is the 30th anniversary. This year's the 30th anniversary of Mallrats. So it's nice to actually hear how it holds up to today with someone who has never seen them before.
Well, it's nice to watch movies that were made in like the early to mid 90s too. Cause like I've said, like I was just literally a toddler when this came out. So I missed a lot of the 90s genre. Cause once I was like old enough, you know, like in the early 2000s, it was things were going in a different direction. And I remember staying up late, like watching Comedy Central, you know, like past midnight when like more of the adult stuff would come on, and you're catching South Park and Dave Chappelle, which for me hold a really important like part in my psyche, is like kind of developing like my sense of humor as a young adult, and also kind of like, you know, like going behind my parents' back and watching things they probably would absolutely not wanting me to watch. So it's nice to go back into the 90s to see the things that were happening around the time that I was growing up. You know, my sisters would have been around the age to watch this stuff because they were born in the 80s, but I was just a tyke, so I was, you know, not around for the release of Clerks or for Mallrats to really want to watch it or pay any attention. So it's nice to go back to the decade when I was born to kind of experience what the cinema was like.
What the hell was going on?
What the hell is going on?
Well, this is awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time out and, you know, watching the movie and talking to me about it. And we'll definitely, I'll schedule with you Chasing Amy. Maybe we'll record it next month or something like that. But yeah, I want to do Chasing Amy with you, and I want to do Dogma with you for sure.
Love that. You said a lot of really great things about Dogma, so I'm pretty excited to see that one.
Okay, good. So, all right, well, we'll see how far the Kevin Smith train goes. But right now, I'm having a great time chatting with Luna about, you know, Kevin Smith stuff and weird 90s shit and horrible 90s fashion. So, Luna, before we sign off, is there anything we didn't cover that maybe you wanted to mention on the about the movie at all? Did we cover everything?
I think we hit everything. I mean, we could always talk longer, but I think we hit most of it, the nail on the head, so...
Okay. Okay, but still a thumbs up from you, but Clerks, you're still liking
Clerks better.
Two thumbs
up, but I would watch Clerks again, Mallrats, it might have to be a little while before I venture back into it.
No, I totally get that. So we'll obviously we'll keep a now we'll start tallying the ranking for you, and we'll see where Chase and Amy lands after we watch that one.
Sounds great. Thanks, Corey.
Of course. Well, I love you, and as always,
we'll catch you on the dark side.
Be sure to subscribe to Podcasting After Dark and give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Support Podcasting After Dark on Patreon. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Podcasting After Dark. And visit us next time for another installment of Podcasting After Dark with Corey Stevenson and Zach Schaefer.